The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Sports Talk 1240 is brought to you by DraftPot.com. DraftPot is changing fantasy sports. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with promo code SportsTalk1240 and receive a 100% deposit bonus up to $1,500. And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Taking you until 9 p.m. before Eric Getzoff checks in and will host the final hour of the program. Lots to get to. Another NFL week almost in the books. We got Sunday Night Football going on. While we'll be on the air, we'll be following that along. Of course, keeping you updated. We've got Arizona and the Cincinnati Bengals at the game tonight. All the earlier games are in the books, including the New York Jets. And it was a brutal performance. And it's same old Jets as we always talk about, Dan. I know when we were driving in, we were just ranting and raving about this one. And it was a terribly disappointing performance today by the Jets. It was frustrating from the start of the game, how they lost the game at the end. And, you know, for a season that looked like it could be something when the Jets were 4-1, you know, we come back to the Sports Talk 1240 airwaves and you know, feel good about the Jets over the summer. And now from 4-1 to 5-5 and looking outside of a playoff spot right now.
And it was brutal today. And really the last 2 weeks, you look on last week, they had 10 days to prepare for this game. You go back 10 days ago, they lost a heartbreaking game to the Buffalo Bills. And really the same kind of performance. They couldn't move the ball offensively. They couldn't get into a rhythm. They couldn't run the ball. They just couldn't establish that ground game. And it seemed like just Ryan Fitzpatrick, when the Jets needed him to make a throw, made a couple, but overall could not make the big plays to put the Jets in the end zone. And defensively, this defense hasn't lived up to the hype. They brought in, they spent all the money in to work on that secondary, and it looked really bad today. And you never want to get on Darrell Revis. I love Darrell Revis. I'm happy he's back with the Jets, but he got toasted by Hopkins today. He toasted him on that big touchdown, and you know then Revis went down with a concussion, and Hopkins toasted Marcus Williams, who was playing one-on-one coverage with him, which was ridiculous. But the bottom line is the Jets did not show up today, and they lost the game. They, in my opinion, they needed to win. They needed to put themselves away from the pack at 6-4. By getting this win today, they would have done that. They were going against T.J. Yates, a third-string quarterback, 3 weeks ago, wasn't even on a team. Gets a call from the Texans because their quarterback situation was up in air, and the Jets just a very, very underwhelming performance today, and it drops in the 5-5, and we went from saying, wow, this team's going to easily cinch a playoff spot at 4-1. When they were 4-2, we were still saying that. And now 5-5, how many other teams are 5-5? It seems like half the AFC is 5-5. The Jets have put themselves in a terrible hole. They really have.
And the performance today was pathetic from start to finish. From the coaching staff, the Jets had 9 days to prepare after the debacle that was last Thursday night against the Buffalo Bills. For them to come out the way they did today, after having 10 days off and 9 days to prepare for a Houston Texans team that was starting a third-string quarterback.
And on a short week.
On a short week, you're right. And here's the thing with the Texans. You know, they have a good defense. I don't think anyone is going to deny that. But this is a Houston Texans team that hasn't played well. They played better of late, but the Jets really missed an opportunity here today and last week, of course, as well. You look at what they didn't do last week. They didn't win. You said, you know what? They better show up against the Houston Texans today. And from the start, they didn't play well defensively. You know, it's one thing to see Darrell Revis get beat. That never happened. So I can almost live with that because, you know what? Revis is entitled as a great player to have a bad game. He picked a bad time to have that bad game, but I have issues with the coaching staff and then the offense and several other players on the defense. First off, we mentioned it. The Jets had 9 days to prepare. You couldn't tell. I mean, they're calling timeout. They're calling too many men on the field on the Jets after a timeout. You know, they're leaving J.J. Watt, arguably the best defensive player in football, one-on-one with Giacomini and DeBrickashaw Ferguson. You're just asking to get lit up if you're the New York Jets, and that's what happened. And once again, it's kind of the same story as you just said, Dan, with the Bills game from last Thursday. You know, the offense took way too long to get going, and by the time they started to find some rhythm and the Jets cut into this lead and made it 24-17, it was too late. And once again, just like last week when they scored late and couldn't get the big score, they couldn't get it done today. And I was so disappointed with this defense. They allowed 123 yards on the ground. Marcus Williams is left one-on-one with Hopkins. I mean, it's one thing if Darrell Revis is going to be beat, but you can't leave Marcus Williams one-on-one. You're just asking him to get beat. And that's what happened to the Jets again today. And we mentioned it, but they allowed T.J. Yates to throw two touchdown passes. We saw Cecil Shorts throw a wide receiver touchdown. I mean, the Wildcat today, the Jets allowed the Wildcat to gain 46 yards on six separate plays. The Wildcat. We haven't seen this used since 2008. And the Jets were lit up by the Wildcat. It was so disappointing defensively.
The Jets didn't look like they were ready to play this game, really, from the start. And you mentioned about the Wildcat. What frustrated me was not only the fact that they weren't ready for the Wildcat. Everyone's prepared for the Wildcat nowadays. The Wildcat has been an ineffective offensive weapon since 2008. It really has. And, you know, five plays, 46 yards they ran on it. And then, not to mention, like you said, the Cecil Shorts touchdown pass to Blue, the running back, to Alfred Blue. The Jets just didn't look like they were ready for a lot of the things Houston did offensively. And they should have been, because they should have known that with a third-string quarterback who hasn't started a game in forever, hasn't been on a team in 3 weeks.
He was like me and you. Ago. He was watching NFL football on his couch on Sundays two weeks ago.
And the fact that the Jets weren't prepared for the fact that Houston might have a wrinkle or two, and they decided to do it a few times, the fact that the Jets were on their heels, and every time Houston needed a first down, they got it.
Forget that.
Couldn't get off the field on third down.
They weren't prepared. They weren't ready to execute from the get-go. Houston really took it to them. They ran the ball down their throat early in that game. And you could say, yeah, the defense played well and gave them a chance. They did pitch a shutout in the fourth quarter. But they allowed 14 points after halftime in the third quarter. Right after the Jets were able to score and tie the game up at 10 with 13 minutes left in the third quarter, what does this defense do? They give up a touchdown in the next drive, 7 plays, 80 yards in 3 minutes and 30 seconds.
No, they handed it right back. The problem was, defensively, the Jets couldn't get a big stop. My attention really jumps to the offense, because they should have been able to run the ball against this Houston Texans team. They're in the bottom four, I should say, in stopping the run. And the Jets were only to muster 21 carries for 70 yards. They should have been able to run the ball and work their offense. They never just got into a rhythm offensively. You really weren't sure what the game plan was. In the first half, I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick tried to. They couldn't get the ball to Eric Decker. Eric Decker's a big part of what they're trying to do offensively.
They targeted him 11 times. He only had 4 catches.
And they couldn't get the ball to him in the first half. A couple times he was open, some miscommunication. It looked like a couple times underthrown by Ryan Fitzpatrick. Bottom line, the Jets couldn't get into their rhythm offensively. They got to be able to run the football. Ryan Fitzpatrick can't be throwing the ball 39 times.
Well, what did we say when the Jets were 4-1? They were able to run the football effectively. Chris Ivory was arguably one of the best running backs in the NFL during that period when the Jets were 4-1
to
open their year.
He was.
Since Nick Mangold got hurt against New England, and since, obviously, Willie Colon was placed on season-ending IR, they have not been able to run the football effectively. And we've said this about Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's very good at being average. He's an average NFL quarterback, and if you strip his running game away from him, you're going to lose.
He shouldn't be throwing the ball 39 times.
And here's the problem. If he is going to throw the ball, these receivers have to pick him up. That Devin Smith drop today is deplorable. That can't happen. He dropped a 46-yard touchdown pass. That changes the whole complexion of the game if he catches that ball. And I'm tired of waiting on Devin Smith. Last week he cost them a game when he botched the fumble on the kickoff. That led to a touchdown for the Bills. Today he dropped a 46-yard touchdown pass, and Chan Gailey has the audacity to draw up a play at the end of this one. The second to last time the Jets had the football, and they're driving down the field, and Fitz throws that pick. The intended receiver was Devin Smith. Where's Brandon Marshall? Where's Eric Decker? The play calling has been bad. The execution by the quarterback and Ryan Fitzpatrick the past couple weeks has not been good either. But it goes from what you were just saying, Dan. The fact that the Jets have not been able to run the football, and this is what happens, we shouldn't be that surprised, because we know what Ryan Fitzpatrick is. He's a solid NFL backup. Can he spot start for you? He can. He's an average NFL quarterback, though. Sometimes he plays below average, like today, and that's not good enough when you don't run the ball.
And they didn't help him out. And you mentioned the drops were brutal, and Brandon Marshall had one to his credit. And the problem is when you have an average NFL quarterback and you don't have a Tom Brady, you don't have an Aaron Rodgers or a Russell Wilson, you can't make the mistakes that the Jets make, both offensively and defensively. And last week, with the Devin Smith fumble on special teams, you can't make these kinds of mistakes. And you're right. The Jets have to have a running game. They should have been able to run the football today. They weren't. And another problem I have, just switching back to the defense, they couldn't put any pressure on T.J.
How about one sack on a third-string quarterback?
And you give them credit, the one sack, they forced the fumble, they recovered it. They recovered it, so a strip sack there, but they weren't able to put as much pressure as they needed to on T.J. Yates. They should have had him scared.
And I don't care if they Sheldon Richardson T.J. doesn't scared. Play. And you're right. It, the fact that Sheldon Richardson didn't play.
He didn't play the first 4 weeks of the season.
It's not an excuse. It's not an excuse. Muhammad Wilkerson and Leonard Williams should be good enough to get to the quarterback. They didn't do it enough today. Todd Bowles' team was not prepared. It was evident when the Jets, after a timeout late in this game, picked up a 12-man on the field call that gave Houston another play. How about throwing the Smith when the game was on the line, as we just said, and the simple coaching adjustments with J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt, they allowed him to dominate this football game and got the entire Jets offense out of sync for 2.5 quarters.
Absolutely, and it looked like at one point, I think Kevin Harlan, who was doing the game on CBS, alluded to this, is the fact that the Jets looked scared offensively. They were genuinely scared of where J.J. Watt was coming from, and the problem was the Jets didn't make an adjustment. You said it. They left Breno Giacomini on the right side and DeBrickashaw Ferguson on the left side out to die, out to dry. They didn't chip. They didn't put a tight end. You want to use Jeff Cumberland? How about use Jeff Cumberland up on the offensive line to try to chip J.J. Watt?
Also, when the Jets are running the football, you said this in the car when we were driving into the WGBB studios, Dan. I mean, when they bring the fullback, it's a predictable run.
It's so predictable.
Anytime the Jets are running the football, it's predictable. And that's why they only ran the ball for 21 times for 70 yards. You know, if you're the New York Jets and you have a quarterback in Ryan Fitzpatrick that's more of a game manager, you got to give him a running game. And you know what? If you're not going to give him a running game, this defense against a third-string starting quarterback has to be better. They have to be up for the challenge. They have to be able to make plays. They didn't do enough today. We saw Revis get beat. You can almost live with it because he's Darrell Revis. But Marcus Williams can't be locked up one-on-one with Hopkins. That can't happen. Hopkins is one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. They also can't be in a situation, as you just said, where they're only getting to Yates once. They needed to force turnovers against a third-string quarterback, and this defense, very disappointing. They weren't good enough to get it done.
No, the bottom line was is the Jets didn't put any pressure on T.J. Yates. He had so much time in the pocket to really move and read through his progressions, and that shouldn't have happened. They should have been putting a lot of pressure on him for a guy who hasn't started in a long time. Came in last week after Hoyer went down. They should have been put a lot of pressure on him. They should have made him uncomfortable. They didn't do a good enough job doing that, and they couldn't get a big stop on third down. And what really hurt was they tied the game at 10. They have the momentum on their side, and you said it. Five plays, boom, 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 3 minutes, they score a touchdown. And they took a 17-10 lead.
And a great defense against a third-string quarterback will find a way to get a stop. And we can kill the offense, and we will. I mean, we have been killing the offense. But this defense, for all the money they spent in the offseason, and all we heard about this defensive line and how great they're going to be, and that Revis and Cromartie are back, you know what? They got Calvin Pryor back today, and he played well. But outside of him, this secondary did not play well at all today. And it's a shame because they spent all the money. We thought they were going to be an elite team. And a perfect example is what you were just talking about. Game's tied at 10, 13 minutes into the third quarter, and the Jets defense gives up a 7-play, 80-yard drive in 3 minutes.
If there's a situation in that game where you need a stop, it's that point. Get the ball back to your offense. They scored a touchdown, threw a nice touch pass to Brandon Marshall in the back right corner of the end zone by Ryan Fitzpatrick. That's got to be the momentum changer. The Jets needed a big stop by their defense, and they couldn't get it. They gave up a touchdown. Boom, they go down 17-10, and it felt like the air popped. The air was out of the balloon. That was it. And they couldn't get, you know, we talked about this in the car. We've talked about this so many times. This isn't a Jet team that's built to come from behind. Not 7 points, 14, 21 points. They're not built to come from behind. They're just not good
enough. They don't have the quarterback.
They don't have the
when
quarterback.
When we say they're not built to come from behind, it basically means their quarterback is not good enough to cover up the mistakes that the rest of this team is making. And Ryan Fitzpatrick today made his fair share of mistakes, and the defense didn't help him. His receivers didn't help him. And at the end of the day, the Jets went from being 4-1 to 5-5. And now you look at their upcoming schedule, they just have to find a way to get a win. I don't even want to hear about the playoffs. Every team in the AFC, we'll go through it later or even now, Pittsburgh at 6-4, Colts 5-5, Texans are now 5-5. One of those teams is going to be directly competing with the Jets for a wild card. Kansas City won today; they're now 5-5. We just mentioned the Jets are 5-5, and the Bills, who are 5-4, are playing New England tomorrow. They'll likely be 5-5. So, are the playoffs a possibility for the Jets? Of course. But right now, with the way they're playing, they're not going to beat anyone, and it's a shame because at 4-1, we really thought that this season could have been a season that ended with the Jets in the playoffs for the first time in 4 years.
And before we jump to the phone lines, one quick point. Take everything you will about Ryan Fitzpatrick and how poorly he played in the game. The last two drives, the Jets had a chance to tie the game, and he threw interceptions. He's got – they can't – they're in a position, no matter how poorly they play today, and they play – they stunk. They were in a position, their final two offensive drives, to tie the game. And they couldn't even get the ball into field goal
range. As bad as they played last week and as bad as they played this week, was the game not right there for them to score?
I mean,
last week was deplorable when they were inside the 8-yard line and couldn't score. But today, I mean, my goodness, just terrible. Against a third-string quarterback for the Jets to go on the road and have 10 days of rest going into it against a team on short rest.
It was awful. It was a nightmare. They played terrible.
Until the end of the game, I mean, sad. Very sad. But we want to hear from you, 631-888-8811. That's the phone line to get involved. We're taking you until 9 o'clock here on Sports Talk 1240. Then Eric Getzoff will be in to host the 9 o'clock hour of the program. But our first call of the night, Matt and Syosset. Matt, you're on with Jake and Dan. What's going on?
Jake and Dan, I just want to say I'm proud of you guys. It's Matt Rapani. You guys should know who that is.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I wanted to talk quickly on the Jets, but mostly on the Knicks. Obviously, today was a pretty terrible performance. Fitzpatrick with two late interceptions.
It was brutal.
That was brutal. And, you know, Revis getting burned, that wasn't fun to watch. Our $70 million man, you know, you hate to see that. But more importantly, this Knicks optimism, it's just you love to see it. But I do hate to see the media overhyping all this Porzingis god. I really hope he has this level head about it, and I hope Melo is really instructing him how fast the media can flip on you in New York just like that.
Well, I think the difference is with Kristaps Porzingis is I think he knows that. I mean, this guy got drafted in the top five by the New York Knicks and got booed. In New York, got booed.
I hope he never forgets those.
And I'll tell you what, you know, he said that night he was going to turn those boos into cheers. And through the first 14 games of the season, he's done that. And I don't think it's over-optimism for the Knicks. I think what it is the fact that this was a team a year ago that won 17 games. They were awful. They were unwatchable. I mean, you didn't want to watch Knicks basketball last year. And here they come out. They're 8-6. And this guy who we were told, Kristaps Porzingis, was going to be a project. He wasn't ready yet. And what is it? Well, we see him come out against some really good teams. You talk about the Houston Rockets. You talk about the Oklahoma City Thunder and play really good basketball and show that he's not soft. He's not a typical European coming overseas to New York to the States. He's physical. He can shoot and he's not afraid to get physical in the paint. And he's shown, I think, through the first 14 games, a glimpse of what he's going to be.
I've been impressed with Porzingis, and obviously, you know, you don't want to hype him up too much. And thanks for the call, Matt. Yeah, we're certainly going to touch more on the Knicks in the second part of the show. But you look at this Knicks team right now and where they are. I mean, for them to be 8-6,
remarkable.
They didn't win their eighth game last year until I think it was January 21st. So Porzingis has been outstanding. No one thought he'd be this good this early. And for the Knicks, it's just a positive sign to have a homegrown talent, someone that you know the Knicks fan had to suffer through a 17-win season last year. Everyone's criticizing the pick, and now they're in a situation where, hey, they got a building block to put with Carmelo Anthony for the next 5 to 10 years going forward. So it's an outstanding job by Phil Jackson, and the Knicks are in a situation where as long as Porzingis is healthy and they continue to develop him, they have a huge piece in place. And, I mean, he's fun to watch, man. I mean, 7 blocks last night against the Rockets, a tremendous performance out of him. And once again, I mean, as a Knicks fan, no one thought he'd be this good this early. And to see him not only be good but be an outstanding player like he's been, it's been phenomenal. And obviously for a Knicks fan that's never seen this team really been good for multiple years at a time, it's refreshing to see this team be at 8-6 considering you know where they were last year with only 17 wins.
And, Matt, it's not only the fact that they're 8-6 with Kristaps Porzingis. It's the fact that they're 8-6 and Kristaps Porzingis is the reason why they are 8-6. They're not 8-6 if Kristaps Porzingis is not on this team. So it's not like he's coming in and contributing and helping out. This guy is a big reason why the Knicks have had success early on in the season. Last night, Jake, scrolling through Twitter, looking around, just looking at some tweets, and people are like, well, you look at the Knicks and who they're playing. These are games they should win, blah, blah, blah. Come on. The Knicks won 17 games last year. I didn't expect this Knicks team to be 8-6. I didn't expect them under any circumstance to play back-to-back road games. Back-to-back road games. Against Oklahoma City and Houston, two of the upper echelon teams in the Western Conference.
And I don't care
and
if
win.
Kevin Durant or if Dwight
matter.
Howard are playing. The Knicks were awful last year.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had Nets fans tweeting at me. I know what you're referring to. Tweeting at me last night saying, oh, the Knicks should be 8-6. No, they shouldn't. No one thought the Knicks were going to be any good. For them to be 8-6 where they are right now is a testament to, A, let's give Derek Fisher some credit. He's done a nice job. The Knicks are starting to win these games late. They're starting to figure out how to
build
the close games.
Confidence.
And they're starting to gel as a team as we thought they would after they got out to a decent start and we saw some potential. And B, Porzingis has been tremendous. And some of these other guys on the team, Robin Lopez has done an outstanding job. Aaron Afalo adds a different element to this team when he's on the floor. And Jose Calderon, you know, as much as Knicks fans want to get on this guy, he's picked up his play up late. So the Knicks have certainly been better. And they're in a spot where obviously going forward, you would expect them to continue to get better because they're such a team with so many new players on this roster. If they can continue to gel, you would expect their performance to continue to rise. And that's kind of where we are right now with the Knicks. Obviously, the Jets, I mean, frustrating times right now.
Oh,
but
brutal.
You had to expect the other shoe to fall with the Jet and Met in you, Dan. I know you're a big Met fan. You know, at some point. The inner gym shows up and the Islanders are playing right now. I think they're actually up 1-0. But they have not been playing well. So
now tied 1-1.
Oh, so there you go. Yeah, it was only a matter of time. But a brutal day for the Jets. The Knicks are at least 8-6. I mean, is that what we have to look forward to at this point? I mean, my God.
It's nice to see the Knicks. You know, as a Knicks fan and around New York, the NBA is better when the Knicks are playing well. And at 8-6, they're certainly playing well. Going back to the phone lines, Tom in New Jersey. You're on with Jake and Dan. What's up, Tom?
Hey, what's going on, boys?
What's going on?
Not much. So I just got a random question for you guys. So obviously I was one of the many guys who obviously lost somebody with Le'Veon Bell. So we're talking fantasy here.
Okay.
So lost that with Le'Veon Bell. So in a trade recently, I ended up getting Langford, obviously taking over the roles over in Chicago. So I'm just trying to see what you guys are thinking going forward with him, with Forte maybe losing out on the contract. What do you guys think about that?
Well, the Bears of late have been playing better. Up until today, they ran into that Denver defense, which is obviously never easy.
And
but
Brock Osweiler.
Well, yeah.
They made a couple plays out there, but Chicago was in this game, and up until this game, they had been playing better. They're now at 4-6. Denver's 8-2. You know, Langford today, you know, 13 carries, 25 yards. He did score. He gave you a touchdown, so he gave you some points there.
Yeah,
but
he got me some points late. But 52 points and going forward, I mean,
well,
I don't know.
What's the status with Matt Forte?
Matt Forte, he was questionable going into today.
He didn't play.
I think he might play next week, but the real question is, I'm in a keeper league, so let's put it that way. In a keeper league, I mean, he's questionable going forward. Are they going to throw the money at Forte, or are they going to say, hey, maybe this kid Langford has what it takes, and maybe we're going to give it to him going forward?
Well, that's an interesting question. I don't know what their long-term plans are. I think, you know, with the play of Jay Cutler, I think coming into the season, his future as a Chicago Bear was in question, but he's played pretty well.
Cutler's strictly there because of his contract.
Well, yeah, but he has played well.
Contract-wise, for sure.
But he's played well this year. I think whatever happens with Matt Forte really is contingent on his health. I mean, Matt Forte has been a guy that has been pretty banged up the last couple of years when he hasn't been on the field.
Right.
So
that's where my question lies. Like, are they going to sit here and say, all right, are we going to offer a guy like Matt Forte another 3 or 4 years, or are we going to sit and look at a guy like Langford and say, well, you might be the new Matt Forte. We might throw you 3 or 4 years
to
a guy.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point. And, you know, you look at running backs, and thanks for the call, Tom. Really appreciate it. You look at running backs in the NFL, and they only last, you know, like 4 or 5 years, it seems like. Once you hit 28, 29, 30, you know, unless you're Adrian Peterson, your play starts to diminish.
And also
that's something you've got to take into consideration.
And the emphasis on the running back position in the NFL is not what it was. You know, it's a passing league now. The rules are built for quarterbacks to be able to throw the ball downfield and make plays. And we see a lot of teams have several different guys that take carries and you don't really have franchise running backs. Those aren't really a thing anymore. You don't really see running backs getting drafted in the top 10 in the draft. That's out of like Todd Gurley and Melvin Gordon. That was the first time in a while we had two running backs go in the first round of the NFL draft. In recent years, it's been all quarterback driven, and that's kind of where the league has been headed. And as you know, getting it back to the Jets, that's where the Jets are right now. And we were talking about this in the car. You know, the bottom line is you look at the Jets and we thought the defense would be a lot better, and they had to be better because when they were 4-1, they were running the football well, and they were playing great defense, and Ryan Fitzpatrick could sit back and game manage. Well, they stopped running the football, and the defense has stopped being an elite unit, and they've been fraudulent out there, and that's why Ryan Fitzpatrick's had to throw more. He threw 39 times today, and we already were talking about it at the open. The Jets aren't built to come back down that many points, down more than really a touchdown or maybe 10 points maximum. And
it's tough.
Once
again, they're not good enough.
Ryan Fitzpatrick was exposed to the quarterback that's playing on his sixth team in his 10-year NFL career.
And, I really thought today the Jets would be able to run the ball.
When they tied it up at 10, I thought they were going to win the game. I thought there was no way this defense would allow them to score. And the next, it wasn't even like a little bit later, it was the next drive. They went down the field and scored. They added the other one on for good measure at the end. I mean, you got to be kidding me. Marcus Williams can't be one-on-one with Hopkins. You know, that cannot happen. And we keep highlighting the coaching mistakes, but at the end of the day, Ryan Fitzpatrick, 19 of 39, one touchdown, two picks, and the two picks came on the back-to-back game-ending drives. Not good enough at the end of the day for the Jets to find a way to win games.
The Jets should have been able to run the football today. They should have been able to put pressure on T.J. Yates to make him uncomfortable, and it just seemed like for a guy who hasn't started – and hasn't been an NFL quarterback for a long time, was too comfortable in the pocket. He was too comfortable throwing. He was too comfortable moving. He had a lot of time over the top to drop the ball to Hopkins and, you know, get it out to Blue out of the backfield and do what he had to do. And the bottom line is the Jets just did not get the job done, and a very disappointing loss. And, you know, you looked a couple weeks ago going into the Buffalo game and you said, well, maybe you win this one, you win
that
one.
They had to win one of those games. If they win one of those games and they're at 6-4, with the way the AFC is stacked up, it changes the whole complexion of the season.
You had two games that were really winnable and they just couldn't get the
job. And now they've lost 4 out of 5 after starting 4-1. It really is a shame. It's ruined what could have been a tremendous season.
And one of the better starts the Jets have gotten off to, really.
Since 2010.
Since 2010. 4-1. I mean, they were being talked about as a team that was really great defense, you know. They were being talked about in the same manner as what the Jets were when Rex Ryan was here in his first couple of years. Really good defense, good offensive line play, run the football, average quarterback
play. It's so disappointing. You know, and I understand this loss is more on the offense than it is the defense, but still, with what we heard about the Jets' defense,
very underwhelming. And it's the last 2 weeks, they have not been able to get a big stop. They
get a couple, but they don't get enough. And if you're a great defense, you get those stops. I don't care who's playing quarterback for you. I mean, look at the Texans today. When they needed to step up and make stops at the end, they were able to do so. And at the end of the day for the Jets, they did not put themselves in a situation where they were going to win this game. They turned the ball over twice at the end, but even before that, it starts with not running the football, really, you know, destroyed their offense. They lost Nick Mangold in this game. That was it. I mean, and the bad coaching, though, I mean, I like Todd Bowles. I think he's done a good job so far.
Last 2 weeks, I have had a lot of issues with a lot of
things. I've had so many issues from Chan Gailey as the offensive coordinator to this Jets team not being prepared to the penalties, to the lack of discipline. I mean, we can come up with a laundry list of what's gone wrong the previous 2 weeks for the Jets, and a lot of it starts with the head football coach of the Jets. He has got to do a better job getting this team ready to play. I mean, the fact that they came out flat against a team with a third-string quarterback, that just can't happen. And the Jets were not good enough today, and they made the Houston Texans look like a team that is one of the best teams in football, and they're not. You know, this is a team that's on their third-string quarterback, and the Jets couldn't expose that. They only had one sack today. It was terrible. It really was.
Jets, they were just flat. They were just absolutely flat. We're jumping to the phone lines right now.
Elward's on with us. Elward.
Hey, guys. What's up? Thanks for taking my call. So, what'd you guys think of the Colts game today? I was like, whoa, because, you know, I'm the biggest Colts fan on earth, but I was like, well, the 40-something quarterback with the 40-something kicker and Luck's out.
They got it done.
I was like, whew. Because, man, I wasn't too sure about this one. When I heard Luck was out for a few weeks, I, you know, kind of fell back and gripped my chair. But, it's, you know, being a Colts fan under Manning for so many years, if Manning didn't play, it was a guaranteed loss. You just, you know.
And Matt Hasselbeck's 3-0 now since taking over for Luck at the beginning of the year.
And the Vince kicking like crazy because there was some talk about keeping him because of his age and how they needed to end the Peyton era, get rid of everyone who worked for Peyton and get the Luck era underway. And, I mean, it's all their decisions have worked out except for the few bumps in the beginning. But I'm not sure what, you know, they fired a few people and things have gotten better. But this is the most excited I've been for a while. You know, I think if Hasselbeck can just keep them above water till Luck can get back, I'm thinking they may cinch the AFC.
Well, yeah. Elwood, thanks for the call. We have to run to a break. Real quick before we go to break,
Bye.
The bottom line is the Colts cannot protect the quarterback. Andrew Luck got beat up when he was in there, and they're very underwhelming defensively.
Well, what scares me about the Colts before we toss the break is what you said, Dan. Their offensive line, it was good enough today. Their defense got that big interception of Matt Ryan today. They
were able to put in the points. We don't even know what goes on with
the
Falcons.
No, I mean, we thought the Falcons were this great team. You know, they had some bad losses on their resume this year. They're still at 6-4, but they've lost to the 49ers. They lost to some bad football teams, but the Colts, to their credit, just like the Jets and the rest of the AFC, they're at 5-5, and they picked up a big 24-21 win today. But we're going to take a quick break right here on Sports Talk 1240. When we come back, more NFL talk, and we'll get to the New York Jets right after this.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. Be sure and visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Hey, fantasy sports fans. DraftPot has an exclusive offer for Sports Talk 1240 listeners. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SportsTalk1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit up to $1,500. That's right. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SportsTalk1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit up to $1,500. What are you waiting for? Do it now.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your GustBuster today.
Whether you're a couple enjoying a romantic meal for two, a family wanting to dine in a relaxed and friendly setting, or a larger party wanting to celebrate a special occasion, Miller Place Pastoria always combines a warm welcome with the finest contemporary Italian cuisine and wines, also serving up Long Island's favorite pizza. We're located right on Route 25A in Miller Place. Come visit us today and check us out online at mppastoria.com.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Back here on Sports Talk 1240, Dan Budick alongside Jake Asmund taking you guys to the top of the hour, 9 o'clock, before Eric gets off, fills the final hour. Sports Talk 1240. We left off talking a little bit about the Jets. Moving to the rest of the NFL, the Philadelphia Eagles.
Oh, my God.
They got obliterated today, obliterated. They actually led 7-0. They get the doors blown open, and Mark Sanchez and Chip Kelly cannot get the job done at Lincoln Financial Field. They make Jameis Winston look like
Joe Montana,
Tom Brady, tossing 5 touchdown passes.
No picks. I mean,
unbelievable.
This was just terrible. And if you're the Philadelphia Eagles, you're now at 4-6, and you're right there in the NFC East, as sad as that is, because the Giants are 5-5 on their bye week right now. Dallas won again today, but, I mean, this is an Eagles team, though. I mean, we said it over the summer. It's either going to work or it's not. There's no really in-between here. They stripped down their starting quarterback from last year, Nick Foles. They got rid of Jeremy Maclin. They let him go. They let LeSean McCoy go. They traded him off to Buffalo. And we thought this Eagles team was going to be good enough offensively because of Chip Kelly's system and his scheme and everything that he does well. Well, that's not working. They lose Sam Bradford. They lose, obviously, half this team due to injuries at certain points of the year, but that's not an excuse. Money down the drain with DeMarco Murray, 13 carries for only 64 yards, and you're obviously not going to run the ball when you're down by that much, but the Eagles were a team that we thought would be able to put up a lot of points, play much better on defense, and a team that could compete for a Super Bowl, many thought. But right now at 4-6 with Mark Sanchez under center, and who knows when they're getting Bradford back, what his status is, they're just a mess right now. And for the Eagles to get killed at home by the Bucks with a rookie quarterback starting, I know he's Jameis Winston, he's a number one overall pick, but 5 touchdown passes today you allowed? I mean, Chip Kelly's going to get fired if this continues. I don't see a scenario where Philadelphia and the fan base that's already screaming for him to be out now will let him back if this keeps up.
And you know what? We gave him the benefit of the doubt. First couple of years, they're winning. Last year, 10-6, missed the playoffs. But you saw them. I mean, they had a pretty good season. You win 10 ball games. Most of the time, more often than not, you're making the playoffs when you win 10 games. Last year, didn't happen. They missed the playoffs. And this offseason, you mentioned it. Last offseason, they get rid of DeSean Jackson. You understood why. This offseason, they dish off Nick Foles. They bring in Sam Bradford. Foles hasn't been good. I'm not saying he has been for the Rams. Bradford's been bad. He's banged up. And now you're stuck with Mark Sanchez as the guy at quarterback going forward with not that many options around him in the receiving game. You took away Jeremy Maclin in the offseason. You mentioned trading away LeSean McCoy. You dish away McCoy. And you say, well, you improved the defense. Well, the defense hasn't played well. You just gave up 45 points to a rookie quarterback who tossed 5 touchdowns. Well, the defense hasn't played well.
And look who the Eagles are throwing to. You know, Brent Celek's a good tight end, but you know Riley Cooper's not a number one wide receiver. And that's kind of what he's playing on this team. Jordan Matthews, Nelson Aguilar. These guys aren't as good as everyone thought they were. And the Eagles have been exposed, and they're lucky they play in an awful division in the NFC. Because as bad as they are, they're right there.
Chip Kelly has a lot of questions that need to be has a lot of answers that need to come. For as far as his approach here, what he's done. I mean, everyone was questioning him, but it comes to the point when you see the results. He flat out took a really good football team and stripped it. Because ego, maybe, I don't know, but he had a plan. I don't even know what the plan is at this point. I don't even know what he was trying to do.
Just think about where they are right now. You know, at 4-6, after everyone had them going so far in this division, running away with it, competing with Dallas if they're not going to run away with it, but at least being a playoff team, I mean, you strip away your quarterback, your number one wide receiver, and your franchise running back all from last year, and you come back with an entirely different team. A lot of controversy already surrounding Chip Kelly. But here's the thing. Would it surprise you if Chip Kelly left? Maybe he took the Tennessee job.
No.
Coach Marcus Mariota, or he's offered the Miami job or the Texas job in college.
Weren't there some – I saw something, an article, that there were some ties to him to the Miami job.
Yeah, there's going to be rumors all over the place. And at 4-6, and the Eagles continue to be this dumpster fire the rest of the way. Would it surprise you if he left?
He has taken, in my opinion, a really good – a team 2 years ago he took to the playoffs. Last year, 10-6 – And made the, it just when you strip a team of their playmakers over the course of two seasons, really three guys on offense, Jackson, Maclin, and McCoy, that were playmakers for this team for years, and you replace them with rookies, and you mentioned you're relying on Riley Cooper to be a number one receiver. He's not. Brent Celek, a decent tight end, he should not be your number one go-to target. He had 7 receptions for 79 yards.
I mean, they allowed the Tampa Bay Bucs today to run for 283 yards. Winston threw 5 touchdowns, passed for 238 yards. They've been totally exposed, and this was a team that we thought would have a much better defense. That was the vibe around the Eagles. They're focused on their defense. They know the offense will be good because of Chip Kelly. Well, you know what? Sam Bradford hasn't been the right quarterback built for this system.
And they don't have a running game.
And Mark Sanchez is clearly not the right backup to fill in. And you're right. DeMarco Murray's been money down the drain. So for an Eagles team that with all the hype and all the expectations, they're at 4-6, and the only thing saving them is what I keep saying, the NFC East, because the Giants at 5-5, 8 wins might win that division.
I mean, they're only a game out.
And the Eagles are right there, which still, I think they still play the Giants one more time. So there's still meaningful games to be played for the Philadelphia Eagles, as sad as it is. And, I mean, we were just talking about the Jets. Same case to be made as well. And at the end of the day, if you're in a situation like the Philadelphia Eagles or the New York Jets, every win you can get is important. And the Jets gave one away today, and the Eagles at home got destroyed by the Tampa Bay Bucs, who are now very quietly 5-5. Back to the phone lines we go, though. Jackson is out in Westchester. Jackson, what's going on?
Guys, doing a great job. Always great to talk to you.
Thanks, Jackson. What's going on?
You know, agree totally with you guys. I'm just lucky that 5-5 at this point. I can just really, to be honest, I'm just going to take what I got as a Giants fan. And, you know, I think that, you know, you look at this division and you're both right. I mean, it really is a crapshoot, and it's going to come down to which team isn't the worst, not which team is the best, really.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And Jackson, your point on the Giants, I mean, it's so true. Because as bad as the Giants are at 5-5, they're in first place. No one can take that away from them. They have the bye week to rest up and get healthy. And I don't know how good this Giants team is, but you look at what they've done in the first half of the season, and the losses that they've had that should have been wins. I mean, they've lost four games this year in which they led in the fourth quarter. They were there.
With 2 minutes or fewer to go.
Man, I mean, that's a telling stat. That's all you need to know about the Giants. So as bad as this division's been, the Giants just win two of those games. They're in an entirely different situation. Instead, they're 5-5, one game in front of the Eagles, right there behind the Reds, in front of the Redskins. And now Dallas won today. I think the closest team to the Giants might actually be the Cowboys, but they have a huge test Thursday on Thanksgiving against the 10-0 Carolina Panthers. But you know, the NFC East is right there for the Eagles, the Giants, and if the Cowboys can now just run the table with Romo back, it's their division to be had as well.
That's a great point.
You know, Jake, I think you make a great point with the Cowboys. I think that, you know, I was talking to another friend at a couple weeks ago, and I was telling him, you know, with Romo back, this is a completely different team. I mean, you get Bryant back, you get Romo back, you get you get the whole offense back, essentially, because that's really what they were missing. You know, Jason Garrett, we know what happens when Tony Romo's out there. We saw it last year when the Cowboys won that division easily. You know, I just think that you're right. The Cowboys really are their toughest task. And as you guys were just talking about for the past couple minutes, you know, the Eagles really aren't a threat. But I think that, you know, again, part of that is because I think you have to blame the front office here. I mean, you can't let these guys go.
Well, it's Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly's running the show there.
Chip Kelly.
And that's the point we were just making, Jackson, and that's a big reason why the Philadelphia Eagles are 4-6 and have a losing record at home. They do not have the playmakers to win football games, and it starts at the quarterback position. I think they made a terrible mistake in trading Nick Foles for Sam Bradford. I know Foles hasn't played well, but I didn't feel like they were gaining anything in Bradford. And they set themselves up with a backup, a mediocre backup in Mark Sanchez that is not the guy that's going to come in and light the doors down and win your football games.
No.
He's not that type of guy.
I think what they were thinking is, and, you know, again, I could be wrong. This is just what's going through my head. I think they're thinking that maybe what they're doing with, because Sanchez is the backup, I'm just going to take a shot here and say maybe the fact that he's been in the league for a little while and he's won some big playoff games.
I understand what they were trying to do. I just think they were not setting themselves up well by going from Nick Foles to Sam Bradford with Mark Sanchez.
Well, because Sam Bradford's always hurt. And
he's
what
always
happened?
Hurt.
He got hurt again.
And that's the thing. It's like you get a guy who's injury prone, and it's not like he's played 2 years and he's gotten hurt. This guy's been in the league a few years. I never saw him do anything on the field that really stood out. He was a phenomenal college quarterback, but in the pros, he hasn't been able to stay healthy from the day he was drafted until now. I mean, it's not a coincidence why the Rams were willing to give him up. They had enough. They took him with the first overall pick. They overpaid for him, obviously, and he hasn't built up to it. He hasn't lived up to the potential, and I think the Eagles made a terrible deal by bringing him in. I don't see any benefit.
And you know, I think you're 100% right. And last point I wanted to make is, quite a Jet game today. I'm sorry for the both of you guys, but I want to say it was a close game, and I think that while some fans, you guys included, may want to talk about, you know, the negatives. I think that this Texans defense really isn't as bad as people think it is.
Well, the Texans have a very good defense. That was their one thing going into the game that I thought was their most impressive point. My problem wasn't with the fact that the Jets offense wasn't comparable and had issues. I mean, the Jets have issues offensively all the time. It was that the defense did not play like they should have against T.J. Yates. They needed to put pressure on him. They needed to make him feel uncomfortable. They needed to make him force bad throws. They weren't able to do any of that.
And the fact that the Jets were not able to run the football against a Texans defense, as good as they are, they give up a lot of yards on the ground.
They got to be able to establish the run, and they didn't do it. And it looked like they just – I don't know if it's because of Fitz's hand, but it seems like that they're not in sync with what they're trying to do. It seems like when they're out of the shotgun set – It seems like Chris Ivory is very uncomfortable running the ball when they hand it off out of the shotgun set. It seems like Ryan Fitzpatrick's very uncomfortable taking the ball under center with his hand. So there's a lot of issues going on with the Jets as far as how are they going to approach a defense. And when you have a defense that's as good and as quick as the Houston Texans are, you got to be able to adapt.
And despite all that,
you got to be able to adjust.
You can't have drops. You can't do the little things wrong. And that's what happened with the Jets. And thanks for the call, Jackson. You made some good points there.
Thank you, guys. You're doing a great job. And I'll see you soon.
Well, thanks, Jackson. And But here's the thing with the Jets. As bad as Fitzpatrick was for points in this game, it comes back to the fact that there were opportunities there and the drops by Devin Smith. Brandon Marshall had a drop. The lack of a running game. Just the Jets didn't play today with a sense of urgency, and they should have. For a team that in the manner in which they lost to the Bills last Thursday, for them to come out flat on 9 days of preparation and 10 days of rest to face this this Texans team that won 10-6 on Monday night, so they're playing on a short week. I mean, that's downright sad. It's downright pathetic is what it is, too. And as a Jet fan, you know, to see this team go from 4-1 to 5-5, it's crushing because this season was built for the Jets to be able to get back into the playoffs for the first time in 4 years. And you know what? I don't expect Ryan Fitzpatrick to be the team's franchise quarterback, but if they were able to run the football and play defense like we thought they were able to play it at, like what they were able to do earlier on when they were 4-1, I mean, we were saying this team's a playoff team. But since that point, since they were 4-1, they have not played well now in about 5 games. Their one win over Jacksonville, they barely won.
They should have lost.
They didn't play well enough to even win that one. They did just enough. The Jaguars beat themselves. And at the end of the day, if you're the New York Jets, you're in no situation to ever overlook any football teams. And I just felt like today, from the start to the end, the Jets came out flat. And that falls on coaching just like it falls on the offense and the defense. Todd Bowles, we gave him credit when they started 4-1. But now when you lose 4 out of 5, the head coach has to take a lot of responsibility for what's happened with the Jets.
And it goes back to last week with the coaching, with the mistakes I thought they made at the back end of the game as far as fourth down is concerned and what they were going to do and kicking a field goal, not kicking a field goal, and the play calls offensively. It really carried over into this week. I had issues with a lot of the play calls today. It seemed like they just, like you said, they weren't playing with a sense of urgency until there's 4 minutes left in the game and you're down by 14 points. And then you start to play with a sense of urgency. I mean, when they started to hurry the ball up, catch the Texans off balance on defense, you know, they had some success in the air, and they were able to move the ball to a touchdown drive. But outside of that, they were too monotonous offensively. They were very slow. They didn't play with a sense of urgency, and there was no sense of urgency to establish the run. And that's my issue. Why didn't they attack the running game? Why not consistently early on in the game when it's 3-3, 3-0, and you know the game's still really unfolding in the first half? Why not try to establish the run a little more? They got away from it. Fitzpatrick tried to force
the
throws.
I mean, Chris Ivory had 8 carries today. This is a guy that was leading the NFL in yards when the Jets were 4-1.
I don't get it. And Bilal Powell had some nice plays today out of the receiving game, had some nice runs. I'm not taking that away from him. I thought he played really nicely today. But they need Chris Ivory if they want their running game to produce. They need him to be that type of runner he was in the first 5 weeks of the season. And if he's hurt, I don't know what the case may be, but I don't see them, just by the numbers-wise, by only giving Ivory 8 carries, I don't see in the stat sheet that they're committed to establishing the run. And with a mediocre quarterback and a good defense, you got to be able to establish the run.
And just once again, with the coaching, and we talked about this at the Open, but J.J. Watt, they made J.J. Watt look like the greatest defensive football player of all time, and he's an outstanding football player. But you have to do something. You cannot leave this man one-on-one with Breno Giacomini and DeBrickashaw Ferguson.
He toasted him.
You're just
it was ugly.
Asking for J.J. Watt to get in the backfield, have tackles for a loss, finish with 2 sacks today. I mean, he was all over the football field, and the Jets didn't have an answer. And just poor coaching. Poor coaching from the minute they got to Houston to the minute this game ended. I mean, it was just sad. The Jets were not ready to play today. And after they lost in the way they did and the way the AFC is, for the Jets to be 4-1, and now we're sitting here in November, on November 22nd, and the Jets are 5-5, I mean, that just cannot happen. And the manner in which this entire season has kind of fallen apart has been so disappointing, because the quarterback play, we know what it was going into the year. It was going to be average at best. But the running game, there's no excuse for that to fail. And we know the offensive line has not played well of late. But they got to figure it out. They got to create some holes. They got to give the ball to Chris Ivory.
They got to get creative.
And at the end of the day,
they have to do – look what Houston did today. They knew they had a mediocre
third-string
quarterback. And what did Houston do? To their credit, they ran the Wildcat. They ran the play on the screen to Shorts where he threw the touchdown to Blue. They took some risks because they knew that if they wanted to win this football game, they were going to have to be creative. And they didn't. And we got to see the Jets start doing that. We got to see the Jets be creative offensively. They're too predictable. We said it earlier on the show. They only use Tommy Bohannon on the field when they're running the ball. There's no play-action fakes. They don't even use him as a blocker. He's on the field when they're running the ball. And it's too predictable.
And despite all that, I mean, you know, Hopkins being left one-on-one. Only one sack today.
It's the little
bad
things they're
penalties.
Not doing.
If you have a great quarterback, you can mask all the problems you have on your team. The Jets don't have a great
Patriots
quarterback.
The Patriots have been doing it for 15 years.
They have, because they have Tom Brady, and when Peyton Manning was Peyton Manning with the Colts, they were able to do the same thing. The bottom line is for this Jets team, the offense, we know what they are. You know, they have not played well of late, but we knew they were going to be average at best. This defense was supposed to be a special defense, especially after the way they started 2-0 and embarrassed the Colts on Monday Night Football with all the turnovers they forced. Revis got toast today. The secondary got beat up today. The defensive line only had one sack. If you're the New York Jets and you're built on your defense of running the football, well, A, you ran the ball for only 70 yards, and defensively, you allowed a third-string quarterback that 2 weeks ago was sitting on his couch eating potato chips watching the football games, just like we are on Sundays, light you up for two touchdowns. That can't happen, and that's why the Jets are at 5-5. And you ask me right now if they make the playoffs, I'm going to tell you
how
now.
How can you say so? Jakey, Connecticut, what's up, Jake?
Hey, guys, how's it going?
How are you?
Well, I'm not so good after the Jets today. Just disgusting performance.
Oh, it was awful. It was downright pitiful.
Oh, slightly better note. Obviously, we got baseball. You know, the hot stove season heating up. Want to talk a little bit of Yankees, Jake. I know you're pretty opposed to signing David Price. Why? And why would you not oppose a guy signing a guy that is just so good, one of the best pitchers in baseball?
Well, a couple things with Price. One, he's 31 years old, or he's 30 years old. He's going to be in his 30s. So if you're going to give him a 6- or 7-year contract, to me, he's just like CC Sabathia, where the minute he starts to lose his stuff, that's going to be a horrendous contract for the Yankees to deal with. And I know the Yankees have a lot of money coming off the books. I would save that money and spend it with a guy that's younger that can help. I look at this rotation right now for the Yankees, and they have a lot of guys that, if healthy, can be solid. So I would just add another solid starter that's not going to cost you what David Price is going to cost you. I have a lot of concerns with Price, and the fact that he's not been able to pitch well in the postseason, that worries me a little bit. The fact that Toronto did not want him pitching in big games, and they were willing to pitch him out of the bullpen with, you know, I think they pitched him out of the pen in a playoff game
yep.
when they were up 7-1. I mean, that shows you all the faith they have in him in a big spot. So, I don't know. I think David Price is a tremendous pitcher. He's going to get a lot of money from whatever team signs him. But if I'm the Yankees, I'm signing a starting pitcher that won't cost as much, that can still give you a lot of innings to complement Severino, Tanaka, and Pineda, and whoever else will be the 4 and 5 starters for next year.
There's been too many times that the Yankees in recent years have gone for the quick fix. You know, long-term contracts, and it works in the short term. And I think if they were to sign David Price, you know, next year, he'd help them win. But the problem is when you're looking forward with that contract, look at the problems the Yankees are in now with CC Sabathia, you know, contract-wise. When you sign a 31-year-old guy to a 7-year contract, 6-7-year contract, you're going to face those problems. What the Yankees have to do is, I agree with you, Jake, they signed a starter, a solid starting pitcher that you could slide into rotation.
Like a Jordan Zimmermann.
A guy that's going to cost you some money, but he's not going to cost you the years.
He's also going to cost you a draft pick, mind you.
Well, that's
he's
true, too. But at the same time, he's the type of guy they need in that rotation. You know, I don't think signing David Price is the right move for the Yankees right now. When you talk about a team that I think is making a transition here, a very subtle transition to being a veteran team, and now all of a sudden maybe implementing them, injecting them with a little bit of youth.
Here's the thing, too. When they signed CC Sabathia, CC Sabathia was 28 years old. So you got plenty of his prime years. And not to say that David Price won't be an outstanding pitcher next year, because I think he's going to be an outstanding pitcher for at least the next couple of years. I just have concerns, because you look at David Price, and he's going to be, I think he's going to turn 31 during the season next year. So you're going to be paying a 31-year-old pitcher, and you're giving him, what, 6 or 7 years? That's what it's going to take to get this guy on your team, not to mention a boatload of money to go with that. So I have concerns with Price. I think there's other pitching options out there. If I'm the Yankees, I'm trying to bolster this bullpen so they have some middle relief options, and I'm adding a bat in the outfield if they're going to trade Brett Gardner, or I'm going to do something like Zobrist at second base. But I wouldn't spend the money on Price. I'd spend it elsewhere on a Cespedes-type player, Justin Upton, one of those guys that you could plug in an outfield, give you some pop with Teixeira and A-Rod, because you're not counting on Mark Teixeira and Alex Rodriguez to give you a renaissance seasons again. You got to have another bona fide bat in the middle of that order with McCann, A-Rod, and Teixeira, and that will put the Yankees in a better spot offensively, and I think with their pitching, if they could just get a full year out of Severino and you got Tanaka and Pineda coming back, you would expect the Yankees to have a decent starting rotation, not to mention Nathan Eovaldi, who will be healthy and ready to go on opening day. I don't think the starting pitching is in need of a high-priced ace. If you can get one cheap or somehow magically, of course. But for the Yankees, I think they got to bolster this bullpen and bolster the lineup more than spending all this money on a pitcher that's going to be 31 on opening day.
And if you can move Brett Gardner and get back a viable starting pitcher that you could slide into the middle or, you know, top half of that rotation, that'd be nice too. But I think the Yankees have a lot of other needs here. I think second base is a need. They need another bat in the outfield. I mean, if you look at why the Yankees were so successful this season, a lot of it is because of Mark Teixeira and Alex Rodriguez and the years they had before, obviously, Teixeira went down towards the end of the year. They need to make sure, and they need to make sure that they're going to fill that production elsewhere because, like you said, you can't rely on a 40-year-old Alex and an aging Mark Teixeira at first base to put up those kinds of seasons. They need to find that production elsewhere.
Not to mention, you got Carlos Beltran.
That's true.
And
right
now going to be 39 years old next year, and he's starting. And, of course, let's look at what the Yankees did last year at third base. Didn't get a whole lot out of Chase Headley. Brian McCann, who had a great first half, really faded in the second half. Jacoby Ellsbury, you're still paying him all this money. And he's already a 32-year-old player. That contract is useless for the next 5 years. You can't trade him. So, Jake, let me ask you. You want to give all that money to David Price when he's going to be 31 during the season next year? I just wouldn't do it.
Here's the reason why. I look at the Yankees starting rotation. I see question marks all over the place. Tanaka, realistically, his arm could fall apart before opening day. His arm could fall apart tomorrow, right? And then the Yankees are left without an ace. And I, to be honest, I'm not so sure if Tanaka has an ace. I think he's more of a high-end number two than a true number one. Look, we've seen flashes of him as a true number one, but is he a true number one, even when fully healthy? I'm not fully convinced of that. Michael Pineda,
a true number one to win? I mean, I look at the Kansas City Royals. Who was their true number one? Johnny Cueto is a good pitcher, and he pitched great in that game against the Mets. But the Royals won a World Series without, I think, having a true number one. The Yankees have, you know, a couple really good twos and threes if you don't want to call Tanaka a one. But Severino pitched like an ace when he was called up. If they get him for a full season, I think that could mask the issues in the starting rotation. And if they're getting the Nathan Eovaldi that pitched so well in the second half of last year at the start in April after they worked with him all last year and turned him into something, I don't think this rotation is as bad as maybe you're making it seem. I'd rather them address second base, address a corner outfield spot, assuming they trade Brett Gardner, and do something to bolster this bullpen, because too many times Joe Girardi would pull his starter after six innings, and the Yankees would have a difficult time getting the ball to Andrew Miller and Dylan Betances for the eighth and ninth inning. What the Yankees did last year was good enough to make the postseason, but they got monster years out of A-Rod and Mark Teixeira, and I just cannot count on that. Again, with A-Rod going to be 41 this year and Mark Teixeira coming off a broken leg starting at opening day at first base.
That's the thing. You have to take in consideration the fact that you're probably not going to get those duplicate years out of those two guys, and it is fair to say, and it's facts, that the Yankees would not have been in a one-game playoff situation or a playoff situation at all if they didn't get big years out of those two guys. I mean, they carried their line up for a lot of the beginning of into the middle of the summer. The Yankees need to address second base, I think, is their biggest need, besides an outfielder. I think they need a bona fide second baseman going into next season. I really do.
Let me ask you guys about this. What about this Andrew Miller Brett Gardner for Starlin Castro?
I don't like the move. Castro, in my opinion, is not a second baseman, and I think Castro's got a lot of off the field. He doesn't get along with his teammates we've seen in Chicago, has been reported. I don't think that's the best move. I think if you trade Brett Gardner, I'm more of the lines of trading him for a guy that you could slide into that rotation that could eat a lot of innings and pitch you deep into games. They need a guy that could pitch into the seventh and eighth inning. You know, they don't have enough of those in their rotation. They need to find another guy.
And Castro
sounds like David Price.
Yeah, I mean,
how'd you get that in?
Castro hit 265 this year, 11 home runs, 69 RBIs. He's a solid second baseman, but I think they can get something else for Brett Gardner. I think they can get bullpen help. I think maybe they can get a starting pitcher that can give him some innings. I wouldn't trade Brett Gardner just for Castro. I want a little bit more, but thanks for the call, Jake. And you hear the music, that's going to mean we're out of time here on Sports Talk 1240.
A lot of fun.
Dan, it was a lot of fun. Thank you to Sports Director Rob Kowal for giving us the opportunity to host over our Thanksgiving break from Ithaca College. Means a lot. We'll be back for winter break.
Winter break, baby.
In about 2 weeks. But that's going to do it for us. Dan, it was a lot of fun. The Jets stink. What else is new?
We'll be back on Sports Talk.
Yep, so it was a lot of fun. Thank you to all the callers. Thank you to all the listeners. Thank you to Brian behind the glass for getting us on the airwaves. But that's going to do it for us. Up next, more Sports Talk. Eric Getzoff's in for the 9 o'clock hour. So long, everybody.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.